You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Today we're going to preview tonight's game against the New Orleans Pelicans, and after that we are going to talk a little bit about the Knicks game since me and Adam were unable to. But to preview the Pelicans game with me, I have from ESPN's Bourbon Street Shots, Mason Ginsburg. Mason, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I saw you wrote something great about Anthony Davis's shot selection earlier this week. You want to talk a little about that before we get going?
Yeah, I haven't done much much follow-up to see if it's still holding. I think last night it held pretty decently. But it was just about the nature of his shots. He's typically like shooting a decent amount from mid-range, and you know he's fine at it. Shoots like 42-43% over his career on long twos, but this year it's changed pretty significantly. More threes, not a ton of threes, but more threes, just making those shots more efficient. And you can call it a bunch of different things, whether you think it's a little bit that he's trying to space the floor more, or the Chris Finch addition from Denver. I mean, the same thing happened with Jokic last year, and he's actually taken a lot more of his shots from mid-range without Finch there. So obviously, you know, correlation doesn't equal causation. Hard to tell, especially with such a small sample size. But it does look like, I mean, from a team-wide perspective, the Pelicans are looking to take more efficient shots. So it's been nice to see. Hasn't really translated to a great offense yet, because they need some help from some of the other guys.
Yeah, thank you for the free segue. They are 22nd in offense so far and 9th in defense. The defense was expected with such good rim protectors like Cousins and Davis, and the offense was expected with such lackluster wings and interesting so far guard rotations combined with a bunch of injuries. So it's been weird for the Pelicans so far just because they haven't had Rondo. They haven't had their first pick in the draft, Frank Jackson. They haven't had any of their backup centers. They were able to snag Jameer Nelson per your perfect prediction, literally. But other than that, the rotation has been hampered so much by injury. So with that, what have your impressions been of the team so far, given that they've had so much adversity?
Yeah, not great. 5-5 at this. I mean, if you just wipe out any context and say, okay, they're 5-5 with the schedule they played. They played 6-10 on the road. They played, you know, the four wins in the row were against bad teams: Sacramento, Lakers, Bulls, and Mavericks. But still, I mean, a road win's a road win, and so, like, you know, 5-5 is fine. You know, it's more about how they've played, and it hasn't been. I mean, obviously, the Cavs game was a high point, but we've seen a lot of issues with the Cavaliers' defense so far this year. So it's, you know, it's maybe not as great as we thought at the time, but. But yeah, I mean, there's been struggles. They, you know, they had to adjust the offense from the entire, you know, rotation at during the last game of the preseason, and then beyond because of the Rondo injury, which, you know, obviously Rondo's got his reputation in recent years, but not being much of a plus player, but the Pelicans, you know, designed their offense around having him and Drew being off ball. And then when he gets hurt, everyone's role changes, and it's been a struggle for them offensively. And I don't think he's gonna, you know, fix all the problems, but, you know, slotting guys in the roles that they went through training camp playing is gonna help. I did think Jameer Nelson would play a little bit more as a starter or with that unit to try to make things a little easier on the, you know, on the team and kind of slot people back in the right roles, because he's played fine. He's played well for New Orleans since he's come in, but. You know, they've gone with the starting lineup of Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore, who are, you know, probably the two best remaining guards that are healthy. But, you know, it hasn't really translated because it's, you know, they practice one way and they've been struggling to really initiate any sort of offense. There's been a lot of standing around recently.
Yeah, it's interesting with a guy like, we've talked about every other starter, but we haven't said his name yet. They started Dante Cunningham at the three. He's not really a cutter either. So a lot of what they do is predicated on they're two superstar bigs, and I wrote about DeMarcus Cousins this week, and I know you wrote about Anthony Davis, but I think the experiment with them personally is working well. I think they've both been huge positives when they play. It's when they have to sit them that the challenges come. But what about those two guys? Have you seen anything from them beyond what I just said, that they've been just dominant? Have they had any problems gelling, or has it just been as advertised with two superstars on the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they play well together. There are some There have been some Cousins related issues, I would say, on the floor. I mean, obviously he's been wonderful off the court. Everything's been great since he came to New Orleans. I think he has maybe like one technical foul in the since the All-Star break of last season. But like, you see him kind of getting lazy sometimes on both ends. And so last night was a good example. But their three big players played 40 minutes against the Dallas Mavericks, which is not ideal. You'd hope they could wrap that game up easier. But he's been, on either end, he shows an unwillingness to get dirty in the paint. He definitely did not want anything to do with Robin Lopez inside, which is unfortunate. You know, he camped that around the 3-point line. He's a good 3-point shooter. No knock against him there, but he's got to be willing to get inside and be the center. While the floor spacing with him is nice, he's got to also do some of the other stuff that really makes him such a dynamic and incredible talent. And so even on defense, he's a good player when he cares, when he's engaged. And so it's been hit or miss in that regard. And obviously his stats are overwhelming, but there's been some, I don't know if you want to call it lack of focus or just lack of willingness to really do the things that he needs to do to make him the best possible version of himself. And so, but as far as his fit with AD, I don't think there's been any problems. I mean, they played together very well. And like we said, it's more about the rest of the roster kind of doing their job.
Yeah. It's been tough for them for roster construction, just because of some other bad contracts. We don't have to talk too much about that. When I look across the team stats for the season, they're first in rebounds, which you'd expect with league-wide, which you'd expect with two guys of Cousins and AD stature, most of that coming on the defensive end where they're also first in rebounds. They're eighth in two-point percentage just because I feel like they're really good at getting their shots inside. And they're seventh at free throw attempts because same thing, you got two guys who bully their way inside a lot. But the two things that shocked me the most were second in assists, because I don't really know. I mean, I know there are creators on this team, but Rondo's injured and Giroux was kind of designed to play off ball more. And fourth in three-point attempts, which given that all offseason it was drilled in everyone's head that they have no three-point shooters, even though that was a little overblown. That's still nice to see. You want to touch on those two things a little bit before we get into this game's matchup specifically?
I think Jameer Nelson's helped with the assists. For sure, he's been like kind of a godsend from them. It's because they really had no creators. Giroux was the only kind of point guard they had, and it's just it's been nice to have Jameer, and he started the overtime game against Chicago on Sunday night or Saturday night. Sorry, He played alongside Darius Miller, Jrue Holiday, DeMarcus Cousins, and AD. Darius Miller because he used the hot hand from three-point range. So, and that really helped the Pelicans close out the Bulls. It would be nice to see him play a little bit more with the starting unit like he did in overtime. The three-point attempts, I think they're a little lower than that. I think they're above league average in attempts per game, but they are. I don't know if they're maybe borderline top 10. They're getting open looks because of AD and Cousins. They're just, they're struggling to knock them down. And it's too bad. I mean, they're the fifth worst in 3-point percentage so far this season. It's not like they have a bunch of bad players taking 3-pointers. I mean, most of the guys that are taking these shots are, for their career, they're league average or a little above league average. So, I mean, Jrue Holiday struggled. Dante Cunningham struggled after he had his best year of his career in 3-point percentage last year. So, it's still a small sample size at this point. It's not an excuse, but I think they'll kind of end up around league average in 3-point percentage, based on the guys they have taking him and how open the shot should be because of AD and Cousins. But, it hasn't gone as well as expected so far.
Yeah, I should have prefaced that the attempts were total attempts that I said fourth in the league, but per game could in fact be lower than that. I just have the totals in front of me, and they've played two more games in the Pacers and more games than a lot of teams with their 10 a game. But you said their percentage should come up a little bit. I agree with that. Only four guys over 35%, and one of them is Jordan Crawford, who's not on the team anymore. So you got to think that I love Jordan Crawford, so it's sad to see that. But yeah, you got to think those numbers will come up. I agree with you there. But I think we got to look into this game happening tonight against the Pacers, because it's going to be a fun one with two bigs matching up against each other. Miles Turner versus DeMarcus Cousins. I think that matchup's going to be really fun. They're both kind of spacey guys who can defend in space, defend at the rim, hit the three. You know, some of the offense is created through them in the post. I think DeMarcus Cousins clearly has the advantage because he might be the best center in the league, but I think it's going to be a good matchup. Are you excited to watch it? Do you like what you've seen from Miles Turner so far?
Yeah, I love Miles Turner. I, 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 did my graduate school at Texas. So I'm a Miles Turner fan. I had him in fantasy basketball last year. So I've been tracking him pretty closely. He's a fun talent. I'm curious to see what the Pelicans do against him. I wonder if they'll think about putting Anthony Davis on him. I mean, it depends on, you know, who's at the four and if they think, if they think that's a positive matchup for them based on style of play. Cousins is the default answer just because he's the center, but I wouldn't be surprised to see AD spend some time for this game.
Yeah, I like the idea of that as well. AD might be a little better at defending in space than Cousins, even though they're both pretty good at it. Another guy for the Pacers who's been good is their other posts player, Domantas Sabonis. I don't know if you'd be keeping up with him, but pre-Cavs game, he was 28 for 29 in the four Pacers wins up to that game. He's shooting incredibly well this season, 63.5%. His effective field goal percentage so far is 63%. He's been awesome. So I expect this to be a very post-dominant game, which means that it could be kind of swung in the ways of the wing players. Is there anyone on the Pelicans you think could have a nice matchup they could exploit this game or not so much?
I would really like to see Jrue Holiday do something. I mean, he's been a disappointment for the Pelicans this year, without a doubt. And you know, obviously he went in through training camp as the shooting guard and then he came back to point guard, but that's a position he's played his entire career as point guard in. So I think he should have an opportunity. I don't know if Indiana plans on throwing Oladipo on him. It wouldn't shock me, because given the lack of much offensive firepower elsewhere on the wing for the Pelicans. But if he gets Collison as his matchup, I mean, I would hope that Jrue can take some initiative. But Collison's had a nice season so far too, from what I can tell.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see who the Pelicans put on everybody, because given that Collison's only 6 feet tall, he's kind of smaller, and Jrue Holiday is pretty long and tall for a point guard, that might be a defensive mismatch the Pelicans can take care of. But when I didn't know this, that he's only 9 for 40 from three so far this season, Jrue, he's been struggling more than you'd expect, especially after fetching a big contract, which is not completely related to his play, a lot of leverage issues there, but that's a lot of why that was able to happen. Do you think Jrue can have some step up to improve? Do you think this could be a good game for him? I know you just talked about it a little bit, but what can he do better specifically against the Pacers to get the team's offense going a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got to go back to their bread and butter more. I mean, you saw once or twice down the stretch on Saturday night, the Jrue AD pick and roll is one of the best plays for this team. And even after Cousins got there, it was a play that worked very well. It's just really tough to stop, and especially when you have another option there in Cousins who's drawing attention away. It's something that should be able to work with a decent success rate. But I mean, he's got to shoot better. He's got to do a better job just being the guy on offense. I mean, he's not one of those great floor generals. He's versatile, but he's not excellent in any one area. But he's got to use that versatility, and he's got to be able to do the things well that he has done in years past. And so far, he is just underperformed. And so I don't think he's a lost cause by any stretch, but he has had a rough start, and his improved play is key for the Pelicans to really make that push for the playoffs.
Yeah, I still really like Jrue Holiday, so I'm hopeful that he can kind of step up. I know he has some ties to Indiana at some point. I know there was the smallest rumor of the offseason that the Pacers would try to sign him. That was pretty funny. But for the Pacers specifically, I think a matchup they can look to exploit is Bojan Bogdanović versus Darius Miller. I know Miller doesn't start at all, but he gets decent minutes on the wing, I believe, still. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been Cunningham starting, but and I don't know. I mean, I'm curious to see if Gentry kind of rolls with that overtime lineup that did so well against the Bulls and says, hey, let's go with Jameer Nelson, Jrue, and Etuan Moore. But it'll probably be Cunningham starting, assuming he doesn't change anything.
Yeah, a lot of turmoil over there at the three in New Orleans, but that could be a time for Bojan to shine. He's been very inconsistent so far this year, but I guess it seemed like New Orleans, it likes to clog the middle and force you to shoot above the break kind of shots. I think it could be a good game for someone like Bojan, who they have moving around the perimeter and shooting from three more often. And I think they're not going to have a ton of trouble slowing down Oladipo. I know he's been absolutely crushing it from three so far this year, but getting to the rim is just so hard against this New Orleans team that even though he's so good at stopping and starting and beating guys to the rim and scoring, you know, he could have a tougher time finishing around the rim, which could, you know, stall his stats. But it'll be interesting to see how that matchup goes, especially considering, you know, like Mason just said, we don't really know who's guarding who in the backcourt at the moment. It'll be interesting to see how that sort of unfolds. I think a guy on the Pacers that is in trouble is Sabonis. I know I just talked about how he's been good so far this year and he's going to be banging in the post, but because of all the fouling problems he's had both this year and over his 2 years in the NBA, given that he's playing against two guys in Cousins and Davis who average a combined 17 free throws a game and make 14 or 15 of them guaranteed every night because they're so good at the line, could be a tough night for Sabonis to step out and stop anybody. Are there any other matchups, Mason, that you think the Pacers could either exploit well or not do as well with?
Yeah, I mean, everything you said makes sense to me. I'm not sure who's going to start at the three, but assuming it's Cunningham, he's a little slower footed. He's had trouble. I think he's a fine backup four or smaller ball four, but starting at the three, he's not as quick. It hasn't been a good year for Dante. He played decently well in the game against Chicago. Found kind of a nice role in the rebounding game. He had struggled there as well up until that point. But I think that's that three position is always going to be a struggle for New Orleans. And I personally think on nights when they can get away with playing starting three guards, they should. This is probably one of them. Not to say Bogdanović can't capitalize, but very curious to see how the Pelicans go about that matchup.
I am too. It'll be interesting just because they're such an interestingly constructed team. Two guys we haven't talked about at all yet, Tony Allen and the recently signed Josh Smith. Has Josh Smith been kind of the backup big now that there's all the injuries in the front court rotation? Is that what he's been sort of doing so far?
Yeah, he hasn't played much at all. They've been trying to give Diallo minutes, who was their second round pick last year, played a lot in the D League, showed pretty solid flashes, but I mean, he's had welcome to the big show moments this year. His foul rate's astronomically high, which you expect for young big men like that. But they brought in Josh Smith because Diallo kind of couldn't fill the role at this point in his career as well as they were hoping. Josh Smith hasn't really played much at all, but Tony Allen has. He's been helpful. Weirdly enough, he's almost been more helpful on offense than defense so far. Not to say that he's been great offensively, but he's a great cutter. He creates passing lanes for the guards and for the big men to get the ball to him that other players in New Orleans haven't really been able to do particularly well. So he's been helpful, but I mean, he's older and he admits himself that he's not going to be a guy who can play a ton of minutes every game, but he most sometime for this game Tuesday.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because he was just the best wing player left when they signed him. So it just made a lot of sense for him to fit on the Pelicans. The only guy we haven't touched on is Ian Clark. He's just that 3-point shooter rotation guard. He's played a lot more minutes than I expected, but he hasn't really expanded on any role that anyone thought. And I think he's kind of exactly what we thought they'd be. No huge need to dive into him. My favorite stat I've seen on the Pelicans team sheet that I'm looking at is Jalen Jones. Is he a two-way guy?
Yeah, he's not with the team anymore. He's in the D League or G League now.
His defensive rating is 104 and his offensive rating is 0. So that is hilarious.
With how many minutes? Like three?
3 minutes, yeah. That's fantastic. Yep. 0 offensive rating. I've never even seen that before. We'll be right back after this 30-second break to get Mason's official score prediction for this game. And we're back. Mason, the Bourbon Street Shots sponsored, ESPN True Hoop Network sponsored prediction for this game on Tuesday. I haven't even said it yet. In Bankers Life Fieldhouse at 7 p.m. What you got?
Oh man, that's tough. I think it's going to be a really good game. I'm hoping that the extra time off, I know the Pelicans didn't do anything Sunday, just hold totally off and then practice Monday. But I'm really hoping that that they can come out and play a good game because they really haven't had a good game since the Cavaliers game. I'm not sure. I'm just taking a look at that. So Indiana's been their points per game this year. Efficiency numbers aside, pretty impressive. 111 per game is wild. And so, I think to me, it seems like maybe a little higher scoring game than New Orleans has played so far, but. I like to think that the Pelicans can get by on talent and win this in a close, very close game. So, let's go with, 105-103 New Orleans.
Hey, that's a common score prediction for me in 2-point games for the Pacers is 105-103. I think I've actually done it twice, but, it's funny because the Pacers are 7th in pace and the Pelicans are 8th. And I kind of thought before the season that both of these teams would be in the 20s, kind of slower. That's very interesting so far. It could be a faster-paced, higher-scoring game, especially since both teams have a day off in between, and it's in Indiana. So I think it's going to be closer to like 113-110 Pelicans, but I do think that given that the Pelicans have the two superstar bigs and don't have a terrible backcourt rotation that's completely overblown, I think they have the clear talent advantage. The question is, can Oladipo keep it rolling, and can Turner – he didn't start against Philly, and we're recording this before the New York game, but can he integrate himself well enough since he hasn't played enough this season to really keep the offense humming? And it's going to be close, but since this team's so good at defending in the paint, I'm gonna pick a narrow 113-110 Pelicans win in Indy. But you got any other closing thoughts you want to say on the game before we get you out of here?
Not really. I mean, just it's like I said, it's been a tough week for New Orleans. I mean, they're lucky to be 5-5, to be honest. I mean, although the one game they had against Portland, the one where AD left after 5 minutes with an injury was one I really thought they could have won if AD had been in there for. So I mean, 500 team playing very much like a 500 team, and hopefully this is the game. Unfortunately for Pacers fans, if it happens, but I really would like to see this team finally put things together and in a way that, you know, it looks, it gives people as much optimism as like that Cavaliers game did. So we'll see.
Yeah, the Pacers also got a nice win against the Cavaliers. So we'll see how this.
Apparently everyone did.
Yeah, except it takes LeBron 57 for them to even win anymore, apparently. But yeah. You working on anything fun this week you want to promote really fast?
We'll see. It kind of, what we've been doing things to the side is someone gets it's an idea, just rolls with it. So I'm sure things will pop up. And you know, we have a bunch of great guys writing for us over at Bourbon Street Shots. So I'm sure we'll have stuff, good stuff coming. So excited.
I really enjoy Bourbon Street Shots. I'm sad to see so many of the true hoop sites gone. At least Bourbon Street Shots is still up and kicking. Where can people follow you and your work?
My Twitter, just my name, Mason Ginsburg, and then we have our site handle is Bourbon Street Shots with Street abbreviated to ST. And so a lot of good Pelican stuff for anyone interested in that sort of thing. But appreciate you having me on. This is fun.
Yeah, man, of course. I'll have to have you on the next time these two teams play in New Orleans to see how that one goes. Hopefully we'll have a clear picture of what these two teams are right then. But for now, they look like two 500 teams who like to score a lot. So let's hope it'll be a fun, high-scoring game.
Yeah, I'm hoping not to make it out to Indy for one of these games. Since I'm living in Chicago, hopefully get a weekend game in the near future and can come one of these next few years to check out that arena.
Yeah, it's a blast with the new lighting. All right, everybody, make sure you follow me at TEastNBA. Follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. Email us with complaints because I said something stupid at lopacers@gmail.com. And after this break, we'll have Grant Afseth on to talk about the Knicks game. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. All right, and we are back to a quick review of the Knicks game from last night. And here to do that with me, I have the owner and lead Pacers writer from Indiana Sports Coverage, Grant Afseth. Grant, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really enjoying the season so far, and I really enjoyed the Knicks game where, for the probably first and last time of the season, Alex Poitras led the team in plus-minus. What do you think of that?
That's pretty interesting, to be honest. It was a weird game with a lot of weird lineups out there.
It sure was. He only played 6 minutes, but was a plus 10 in a game of a lot of runs, especially in the fourth quarter, which I think is the place to start because in the fourth, the Knicks outscored the Pacers something like 36-17. I can't remember off the top of my head. I should just look because it's right in front of me, but I'm lazy. But the Knicks came back to win 108-101 against the Pacers on Sunday night in Madison Square Garden. Grant, what were your impressions of that fourth quarter where the Knicks were able to pull away?
Well, I think that my main impression from it was probably what a lot of people were thinking, that Kristaps Porzingis is very good at basketball. That's my main observation there. He really did everything. Like, he took it all the way to the lane. He hit threes, created in mid-range. Like, there's nothing he didn't do in that fourth quarter. It was incredible.
Yeah, for those of you that didn't see it, Kristaps Porzingis' final stat line, 40 points, 8 rebounds on 15 to 24 shooting, and just absolutely took over the fourth quarter. It's impossible for anyone on the Pacers to stop a 7-3 guy who can, you know, like Grant just said, create a shot in the mid-range, bury a three, shooting over anybody, still dominate the post. And he had an absolutely nasty block on Lance Stephenson on a layup. It was just devastating to see. Did you notice anything in that run for the Knicks in the fourth quarter that you think led to that besides Porzingis, or was it just him dominating the flow of the game and slowing the Pacers down?
Well, I think the Knicks didn't really move the ball. Like, too well in the earlier parts of the quarter. Or, I mean, not the quarter, the game. But that fourth quarter, I felt like they started to utilize, like, Frank Ntilikina, and that he ended up hitting a couple three-pointers. I think he ended up shooting 2 for 4 in that quarter. And that, honestly, was probably one of those differentiating factors, because there's just – when you have Porzingis dominating you for he had 17 points on 71.4% from the field in the fourth quarter. And then when you have someone hitting multiple threes on top of that, it's just too much to overcome.
Yeah, I remember that play that got the Knicks the lead was a Ntilikina Porzingis pick and pop, and the Pacers did a really nice job shutting down Porzingis. Thad Young cut him off, and then Collison ran over to cut off any drive he had to the left hand. But heads-up play by Ntilikina, he slid out to the left wing. Porzingis put it on the floor to scoot to the right and create some space, threw it over to him, and he drilled the three to give him the lead. But it was really interesting in the fourth, too, that Sabonis came in for Turner, and I think a lot of that is because Turner's minutes are kind of down because he missed 2 weeks. And the offense was really clicking with Sabonis. But, you know, it just seemed kind of odd that the guy that everyone thought would be this offensive beast and shot 62% or 63% in this game wasn't out there for a big stretch of the fourth. Do you think there's anything to that more than just what I said? Or do you think it's just that Sabonis had been so good so far this year?
I think it's mostly what you said, because you don't really want to throw out a guy who obviously was out for like 2 weeks and then isn't really fully back in game shape, to basically leave it up to him to make errors because of conditioning and then blame him for the loss, because you want his confidence to go up, not down. And putting him in the fourth quarter with Porzingis, on fire, because he lit him up to close out that third quarter directly. Like it was on Miles' head that Porzingis was doing a lot of his stuff in that third quarter. So I think it was good from a confidence standpoint not to throw him back out into the fire.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I know a lot of people were grilling McMillan for that, but I kind of get it, especially with the way that Sabonis has been passing and making the offense hum all season. It made sense, but down the stretch, you know, it just didn't work out. Porzingis was too much. It really wasn't anything anyone could do when a 7-3 guy can literally score from anywhere on the court, especially when the game was slowed down against the Pacers' strengths like that. Some quick hitter notes. Pacers shot 48% from three and 47% from two. Going to be pretty rare to see them shoot better from three than from deep, so that's pretty cool tidbit. The Pacers had 34 rebounds and the Knicks had 46. And as you know, I keep up with the who wins the rebound, who wins the game battle. And the Knicks won the rebounding battle by 12. Lo and behold, they win the game. Grant, did you see anything that you wanted to put into this weird little tidbit stuff?
Well, Lance Stephenson scored his 2,000th point as a Pacer last night.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I wrote about him today and how he's been kind of hit and miss this year, but he puts the clamps on defense. Tim Hardaway did not have the best game I've ever seen. Doug McDermott missed both of his threes, I believe, yes. So it was good to see Lance playing well on defense, but once again, not the best offense. 2 out of 6 from the field, only 6 points. You got any other closing thoughts you want to say before we head out of here?
We really covered it. I think Porzingis being really good at basketball was the main takeaway.
Yeah, the first half, the Pacers were up, I think, 12 to 13 was their biggest lead in the first half. And Adam texted me and said, "Oh, Tony, you said the Knicks might do better. Ha ha, look at this." And then they won in the fourth quarter. And I but yeah, it was just one of those games where the best player and the best talent ended up winning at home at the end of the game. But Grant, man, thanks for coming on to do this really fast. I know you were on a short notice.
Oh yeah, anytime.
Yeah, we'll have to, everyone, where can they follow you and what are you working on right now?
Well, I'll be working on a couple things. One will be about the Pacers' struggling bench unit, and then also kind of the pros and cons on both ends of the floor of a Sabonis-Turner front court.
Okay, and will that be on Indy Sports coverage?
Yes, it will.
Okay, for those of you that don't know, you can follow Grant at Grant Afseth. That's A-F-S-E-T-H. You can follow Indiana Sports Coverage at Indy Coverage. And as always, you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers and me at T-East NBA. Enjoy the Pelicans game tonight. We'll have a Pistons preview out tomorrow with Duncan Smith. Thanks for tuning in and have a great Tuesday.